You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Welcome on in to the second half of Sports Talk, folks. December 30th on a Tuesday here till 7 p.m. That's when we'll hand things over to Mike Haas on the Saints Hour. He'll have running back Audric Estime with him on the program tonight. Want to stay tuned for that. Estime with a big E game against the Titans in Tennessee, helping spark that black and gold comeback for a fourth straight win for the Saints. Who dat right there. This hour, we're going to get a little Pelicans talk after the first break. Talking to Ali Cosell, covering the New Orleans Pelicans and NBA. Man, oh man, these birds, they had a little bit of a positive run, winning five in a row, but have now dropped their last four games. Had that matchup against the Knicks last night. We'll get into that a lot with Ali, and just could not close at the end. But a positive is, I guess you could say, that the Zion coming off the bench experiment seemed a little, you know, it worked, but now he's back getting those normal starting minutes for him. So we'll see how that now translate for this Bird squad that are going to be in Chicago tomorrow on New Year's Eve. Then they'll come home on Friday to host Portland. A lot of folks have been talking about rookie quarterback Tyler Shuck, of course, and what he's been able to put together for this black and gold team since he's been given the reins as the starting quarterback. And looking at ESPN today, Ben Solak, a ESPN writer for them, put out his list of NFL all-rookie team for this season. Best first-year players by position. And, of course, he has Tyler Shuck on the list, but I was surprised, Charlie, see him right now. He's got Shuck on the second team and Cam Ward still as his number one pick, just because I think he's the number one overall pick this past year.
And he played the whole year. I think Solak kind of mentioned that in the article, that he puts into account the full body of work.
Yeah.
And the fact that Cam Ward's played, you know, all 16 games up to this point. He's gone over 3,000 passing yards. But it's funny because when you stretch out Tyler Shuck's production in half of that time to a full 16-game, 17-game season, Shuck's got better numbers. But he takes into account, you know, Cam Ward's been the starter all year. Shuck entered in the starting quarterback basically midway through this season. But he also, I mean, it's not just Shuck that's on the list, Steve. There's a bunch of black and gold representation.
Oh, yeah. One thing I will say that Solak says here, which I don't quite understand, maybe you can explain this to me, what he's talking about. When talking about Tyler Shuck, he says, while I see quality play from Shuck, I don't see the sort of jaw-dropping, math-changing potential I see in Ward. What the heck does that mean, math-changing potential?
Sometimes writers get obsessed with, like, oh, this guy's the next Mahomes type of thing. And, I mean, I think it's the magician type of plays that Ward was trying to make against the Saints defense, where he has just got a muddied pocket, and he's still escaping and looking downfield. That's part of the preview that we were doing, Steve, on Sunday in the First Take show, talking about Cam Ward can do this. He can use his legs to extend plays and throw ridiculous passes because he's got an electric arm. I think that's probably what he's referring to, whereas, you know, Shuck is, I don't want to use the word boring, but that's probably what he's saying. That's not my opinion by any stretch of the imagination. I agree with, you know, when we were talking on the point after about Tyler Shuck outplayed Cam Ward. I don't even think that's really debatable. But I think what Solak is saying there is that the high-end flashes that you saw from Ward and that you've seen from Ward throughout the year have been tantalizing for a number one overall pick. And I can understand that to an extent. You know, at the same time, there's a reason that Tyler Shuck is in the NFL Rookie of the Year race and Cam Ward is not. So we'll just leave it at that.
Looking more on this list, Charlie, no surprise at left tackle. Solak has Kelvin Banks Jr., the ninth overall pick for the black and gold. One of the quieter first-round picks, he says. Banks has slid easily into New Orleans' left tackle spot and taken on a veteran's workload. Rarely given tight end help or chip help, Banks has been an above-average pass protector and has the quickness and flexibility elite pass protectors often have. And, yeah, we've talked about this, and you've heard it countless times with Mark Schlereth saying, this black and gold bunch looks like they have their bookends of the future set at tackle right now between Fuaga and Banks.
very few people I trust more to talk about offensive line play right. than Mark Schlereth. And he said that Banks and Fuaga are both going to be quote-unquote damn good players. So Saints fans should be happy about their past two first-round picks. I think that they've got their bookends of the future. I agree with Stink. I think that Banks has been awesome. The thing about Banks, I remember, Steve, last summer we talked with Greg Cosell after the pick was made. And Greg Cosell does excellent work for NFL Films. And Greg had mentioned, you know, the real testing point for NFL starting left tackles is, can you be placed on an island in pass protection on third and long scenarios and hold up? Not get any help from a tight end, not get a chip from a running back, anything like that. And that's what Banks has done. Banks has been awesome. He does have Will Campbell as like an honorable mention for that position as well. But Banks at the ninth overall pick, I remember, Steve, when we had mentioned Todd McShay's redraft, he had Banks going fourth overall. So the Saints got a pair of good ones with Shuck and Banks. That's, I don't want to say potentially franchise changing, but it's definitely, you want to talk about core pieces of the roster moving forward, I think you got it with both of those players.
I either said it the last show we did or on the podcast with Jeff Nowak, Inside Black and Gold, the fact that obviously GM Mickey Loomis and the staff, the front office, get a ton of criticism for contracts or missing on picks, but this year's draft, definitely a lot of solid hits. I'm not going to say home runs, but definitely getting on base with these selections.
Get double, triple, you know, give me right. all that good stuff. Extra base hits. Get that batting average up.
The other rookie that Solak has on the list, corner Quincy Riley.
He has another one, too. He's got Jonas Sanker.
Oh, I missed that one. Sorry.
So, yeah, if you look a little bit further down.
Short Sanker.
He has Riley as one of the starting corners. I think the Will Johnson's the other one, and he has mentioned that there's been times where Will Johnson, the second-round corner out of Michigan that went to the Arizona Cardinals, has been beat by receivers in pass coverage at times. But that's every corner, especially rookies. Corner play is tough in the NFL.
And you hear Cannon talk about it all the time, saying you got to have that short-term memory, though, next snap and clear kind of thing.
And Riley being a fourth-round pick and being on that list as far as, you know, one of the top rookie corners from this past year's draft throughout his rookie campaign is definitely impressive as far as finding a day three talent by the Saints front office. So, yeah, another really, really solid one.
Yeah, and I went down the list here and see Sanker here, and Solak talking about him says, takes great angles, rarely false steps, and doesn't get fooled by route distribution. Sanker looks like a 10-year vet but has the spry legs of a rookie. I like that.
So we got Banks at left tackle, or offensive tackle, Shuck at quarterback, Sanker at safety, Riley at corner. That's it, right? We're not missing anybody. That's as far as ESPN's best rookies from this past year. That's very good representation for the black and gold. Talking about excitement for the future, it's there with some of these core pieces that you drafted in 2025.
Yeah, and Danny Stutzman, the linebacker, not on the list here, but man, oh man, I really like the way he's been coming on, especially this last game, his physicality.
He's someone stock up for the future.
For sure.
But if I think Solak kind of took this list and did production from this year, and it took some time for Stutzman to get on the field because the linebacker room for the Saints is really strong. And I mean, DeMario Davis still producing at an elite level. Now, Stutzman may be the guy for the future moving forward that they obviously love and they feel very confident in, but that's kind of looking more towards 2026 and beyond. Like, this guy's going to be really good, but that's why he probably didn't make the list.
And sadly, nothing from a guy at the running back position in Devin Neal, but his season was cut short. And, you know, a later round pick too, but lots of promise ahead for him going into next season. Hopefully he can get back on track and into this running back mix.
Yeah, certainly not a whiff by any stretch of the imagination that Neal in his limited time, especially as a starter, showed some really good flashes too. A lot of contributing pieces from 2025. And now the challenge is you've started to build a foundation, right, over the past two drafts. Do it again in 2026, and you're going to be cooking with some gas. But we'll see where the Saints end up picking. You know, Steve, I'm sure that we'll talk about that on the First Take show on Sunday for the people that are wondering what happens if the Saints win or lose this game against the Falcons. Where do they pick? You know, we'll break all that down when we get to it. But not to be worried. The Saints are going to have a premium draft position, especially in round one once we get to April.
We're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to start breaking down the Birds, New Orleans Pelicans, with Ali Cosell, an NBA reporter. We'll be back right after this. Stay tuned on WWL.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Back here on Sports Talk, we believe in the power of everywhere. Listen to WWL anytime, anywhere. Get the WWL shows you love. Dave Cohen, Tommy Tucker, Newell Scoot, Sports Talk, plus all the local content you crave on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps. We are everywhere that you are. Tomorrow night, we're going to have New Year's Eve Pelicans action for you. The Birds taking on the Bulls in Chicago. Pre-game coverage, 5:30, tip-off, 6 p.m. right here, WWL AM and FM, helping us talk about all things Pelicans. Part of the Birds Media, Ali Cosell joining us now here on WWL. Ali, hope you had a great Christmas. How you doing, man?
Hey, Steve. Yeah, I absolutely did. And looking forward to the new year as well.
Yeah, for sure. And hopefully newer and better things for this Pelican squad. We saw a little bit of a boost for a win streak for them, and things have fallen back onto tougher times. Losers of their last four games. Tough one last night against the New York Knicks, where they looked like they had it in hand, but in the end could not finish against the Knickerbockers.
Yeah, look, I mean, they scored 41 points in the first quarter. They had 75 at halftime. That's the most points the Knicks have given up both in the first quarter and in any half, right? Mm. Both of those respected scores. And the Pelicans led for most of the game. You felt good about them breaking through, right? Breaking that three-game losing streak. But unfortunately, what got them is what got them, honestly, against the Phoenix Suns, right, in that two-game series. It's the fact they just don't finish games well. You saw it against the Suns. Devin Booker got the ball, created, got the points for his team. Usually he was the one spearheading it. Last night, even though the Pelicans did a decent job getting the ball out of Jalen Brunson, again, he had a couple of big buckets. And once again, the team that is more experienced, has been there before, was able to get the job done. And that's what's frustrating with the Pelicans, right? Yes, they've got some rookies. But look, Zion's been in the league for 7 years. He's surrounded by, you know, we see it, Jordan Poole, right? He was on a championship-caliber team, and he had his opportunities last night. Same thing with several other of these vets that the Pelicans have, young vets. But for whatever reason, and I don't know why this is, guys, but you just don't feel confident that the team feels confident in getting the job done over the last handful of minutes to get the win in a very close game.
Yeah, Ali, once they were down like 3 points with about a minute or so left to go, I'm just holding my breath the whole time. Like, oh, can they get a stop? But then on the opposite end, it's the offense. And it's crunch time offense. And we saw that happen against Phoenix where they go cold late. And both of those games in that doubleheader, it happened again last night. Where, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a couple different shot selection was questionable a couple different times. Let's just say that. But you hear Zion after the second Phoenix game talking about the crunch time offense, and he's just like, yeah, we're freelancing too much. Freelancing was the word that he mm-hmm. used, and that they need to, as players, kind of get together and figure out these are the sets that we want to go to in these crunch time moments. It feels like someone needs to step up and demand the ball in the clutch. To me, Ali, there were different times where Zion was getting the ball in the clutch. There were times where Poole was getting it, and to varying degrees of success, as you know. But just your thoughts on, you know, too much, as Zion had mentioned, freelancing going on when games are really, really tight. They kind of cramp up a little bit and they get too tight themselves, and all of a sudden they're picking up these really, really close losses.
Yeah, the simple fact is they don't know exactly what they want to do, right? I was the one that asked Zion Williamson those tough questions about what do you want to accomplish, and he's like, we need to find the play that we want to go to and run it, right? Have some trust in something. And it's easy to understand why they actually don't have it. Right during that five-game winning streak, you know, Derek Queen was playing well. He led them to that really big win against the Houston Rockets where they came from 20-plus down, forced overtime, beat, like I said, a very quality opponent. So you felt like maybe they were getting over the hump. But since Zion's been back, he's been acquiring a bigger part of the role in the offense and, of course, finishing games. And so suddenly, should he be the one closing it? And you see that, right? I'm glad you mentioned the last three games because I think – for right now, maybe he should be the team's closer. He should be dictating, honestly, maybe the last couple of minutes or so, and that hasn't been the case, right? He hasn't had every offensive possession because, as to your point, Jordan Poole had three key possessions in last night's game, and he had a great game going up until pretty much that point, right? Missed a layup, had a very, and then he had a couple questionable, you know, basically plays, including that last shot where he shot a three, was trying to get a foul, but it just looked awkward, right? And so, yeah, this team doesn't really know what it's seeking, right? When you play the Suns, it's easy. It's Devin Booker's ball. Right now with the Pelicans, I don't think they even know, right? I'm not even sure James Borrego knows because I asked him too. And they all point to what the answer is, right? We need to establish something and get there, but they haven't done that yet. And I think, honestly, that's something that's just going to take time, right? Should it be Zion? Should it be Derek Queen? Should it be these guys getting on the same page or running a type of play? And the problem is they had that string of practices, right? Then they won five straight, but they haven't almost practiced in the last two and a half weeks. And I think this is what they want to iron out. So until they get that time in together, kind of behind the scenes, maybe they can talk about in the locker room, I think we're going to still continue to be frustrated because this team just isn't on that same page. It got to be, right, when every possession is so important down the stretch.
When you look at the guys right now that are available, it just seems like something happens in that fourth quarter. And while the offensive numbers have been an uptick since James Borrego's taken over, I just feel like defense has taken a massive hit.
Well, actually, the defense has gotten a little bit better.
Okay.
Since Willie Green was here, right? I've seen some improvements in certain areas, right? For instance, I think they're doing kind of a better job on the glass, right? So at times in the game, and of course, they out-rebounded the Knicks. I thought that was huge. When the Pelicans win the rebounding battle, they're almost a 500 team. When they don't, it's almost a guaranteed loss. So there's certain things you see that they're doing better. They're allowing less opportunities around the rim, for instance. They're making the opponent shoot tougher threes. But, boy, guys, I'll tell you what, it's going to be tough for this defense, I think, to get anywhere in the top 10 if you don't have a center you can trust. And that's been the biggest issue, right? Even JB said after the other game, we don't have a Jonas Valanciunas that's going to guarantee us ending the possession with just, you know, one shot for the opponent. We also don't have a shot blocker that we can rely on, right? And you see it, even Missy's in and out of rotation. Same thing with Carlo Matkovich. So there's certain holes in it. This is really rings true when you don't have Herb. The team's numbers look great, guys, when Herb's been out there, right? Offense and defense. But, boy, when he sits, I think you can kind of see it, right? It just falls apart, especially in key moments. So I think that's what, you know, this is just something, yet another thing they've kind of got to get through, but they got to get Herb back. I think once he gets back, then you'll start seeing much better play again.
We saw some Kevon Looney minutes last night, Ali. That kind of caught
me
a little bit off guard.
Yes.
No, especially on the boards, to your point, with the Pelicans out-rebounding, you know, the Knicks, because Borrego had gone on that rant about, you know, we haven't been good rebounding the last 2 years, ever since JV had left, as you had mentioned there, and how they got killed on the boards by the Phoenix Suns. And so I think, you know, Kevon Looney could help in that big man rotation as far as getting boards. He's not JV. I'm not saying that, you know, you can expect him to get 10 boards a game type of thing. But just getting rotational minutes in that front court where he can help you as far as picking up boards, where you don't have to, you know, send all five to crash the boards every single possession. I thought it was interesting to see Borrego make that adjustment to get Kevon Looney some minutes off the bench, and it ended up working out as far as picking up rebounds, which was the major issue in their two losses to the Suns.
Yeah, and I'm glad he pushed that button, because I'll tell you what, Kevon Looney looked fantastic, right? He looked quick. He looked like a guy that had young legs again, because after he had that injury he suffered in preseason in Australia, he played a few games after he got back from the injury, and he looked slow, guys. He looked like he couldn't play. And so it's not a surprise he got shelved for a little bit again, but he looked fantastic. So I've got a good feeling that Borrego's going to go to him again, because he gave some, not only just the rebounds, I love the fact that he got Jordan Poole going from the outside. And look, Jordan Poole, since October, hasn't been able to hit anything, right? Mm-hmm. If you look at field goal percentage, from whether it's from two or three, but in last night's game, he got Poole a couple of screens, got wide open, made them, and he got going right in that game. So those two guys, of course, played in Golden State, and that's yet another way Looney can help, right? He can help Poole's offense get going. He also just knows where to be. The only thing that he'll hurt you on, and again, that's why I talk about rim protection is very important for this team. They just don't have it. And you saw with Looney, Borrego tried to play him some fourth quarter minutes, but when Jalen Brunson was attacking and he just saw Looney between him and the rim, he was able to score easily simply because, right, Looney can't elevate, right, can't really thwart shots. So while Looney can offer some help, he's not the clear-cut answer on that's the guy who, you know, Borrego should close with. It all depends on the situation.
Ali, you tell me, what does a guy like Sadiq Bey mean to this team? Because I was not so familiar with his game when he first arrived, but man, oh man, he is one of my favorite Pels right now.
I'm glad because we all love him. He's as good of an interview as he is when we saw him playing in that first quarter, right? I think he started 7 of 8, 4 for 4 from three, had 23 points. And I'll tell you what, I thought he was headed for a 50-point game because I looked up his stats. Last time he had scored that many in the first quarter, he did end up scoring 51 points when he was a Piston. So he can really pour it in for you. And what you love about him, he's honestly a pro. If you need him to play some center minutes, he's strong enough to be able to handle it, and he'll box out, and he'll get you like 8, 9, 10 rebounds. If you just look at his box score, he's been doing that. But also, if you need a bucket, if you need, you know, for him to even hit an open three, he can do all these things. And what you like is he knows where to get his shot from, right? So when you're watching, say, Jeremiah Fears or even Derek Queen, and they go through a stretch where they just can't make anything, they're putting up like these really tough-looking shots, you'll never see that as Sadiq. He knows how to back down an opponent, use his strength, find the parts of the floor where he does feel comfortable. And that's, honestly, I think, a big boon to this young team. They can learn from him. And that's why I hope, boy, guys, I really hope he doesn't get traded away at the deadline. He's on a great contract, making just over $6 million. And I think this team has a lot of plans on being good next year. So you want guys like Sadiq Bey on your team, who's also going to be making about the same money next year. So I love him. Everybody loves him. I think he's going to be here to stay for next year, but I've got my fingers crossed. It may not happen. Some team's going to love him, going to probably offer at least a good pick for him. We'll see. But either way, yeah, Sadiq Bey is my favorite reserve we've had in here. New Orleans did for some time.
I mean, it was a fantastic pickup by Troy Weaver, who's got the connection with them all the way back to Detroit,
yeah,
and Atlanta as well. It's just he came in as a 3-and-D type of player, but his game has evolved, Ali. I mean, he's been phenomenal for the Pelicans, getting big minutes. A player that I wanted to ask you about that's really heated up in December and been part of the reason why the Pelicans have been a lot better this month than they were at the start of the year, Trey Murphy, and increased like the amount of playing time that he gets as well, but basically right on the edge of what would be a 50-40-90 month of December. He's shooting 54% from the floor, field goal percentage. He's at 41% from three, all this in December, which is a large sample size. We're at the back end of December at this point. And then 88% from the free throw line. My only thing with Trey is I wish he was a little bit more aggressive in calling for his ball, calling for his, you know, his shot, basically. Because there's these times where you see he's kind of standing in the corner and he's letting the play develop around him. I would love to see Trey be more demanding of the ball. Now, at the same time, I think the one thing about Trey's offensive game that hasn't necessarily improved, Ali, is his dribble. And every time he dribbles, I hold my breath a little bit because I just, you know, he's not great at it. But at the same time, he's still a sharpshooter, and he's got that part of his game, I mean, roaring basically in December and moving forward. So I just wish that Trey Murphy would be a little bit more aggressive in calling for his shot because he's been excellent in the month of December.
Yeah, and the reason he is, I did some digging about this. He was coming off that shoulder surgery, right?
Right.
And what I learned is that he had to play basically what he termed to me, it was a new normal for him, right? He hadn't played for a while. The surgery that he had was on his shoulder, the shooting shoulder. So when he was rehabbing, he couldn't start shooting threes right away, right? He just didn't have the strength, didn't want to push things too hard. So he was stuck in the mid-range a lot more. So by the time the season started, he still wasn't feeling like his pre-injury self. And I think that took him some time to where you can really just see it in the numbers, right? So at some point in November, he did start feeling a bit better. And now in December, I think he's fully over it. He's fully back. He's fully trusting his body. And I've heard with these athletes, especially when it comes to something like a shooting shoulder, it matters a lot. So you always have to give an athlete like this some time to return to pre-injury form. And I'm happy that we're seeing it. But yeah, to your point, boy, in yesterday's game, there was about, I want to say, 3 or 4, maybe even 5 drives he had, and he touched the paint. And what he did is he ended up passing the shot up, hitting a teammate somewhere, to where I think the possessions just all ran dry. What you wanted to see, because he is so athletic, because he is such a, you know, talented scorer, I feel like he can rise over just about anybody. And they didn't have Mitchell Robinson. He should have shot a lot more of those shots, right? He should have looked to be more aggressive in trying to put that ball through the hoop, because Pelicans in that second half especially, they had a huge dry spell, and he could have really helped them get over the edge. And again, I think this is something that he's still, honestly, guys, learning. It's not automatic for him, right? He's not Devin Booker in between the years, because when he sees he's out there with Zion, Jordan Poole, he doesn't want to take 20 to 25 shots, right? I hope he does. I hope he develops that mentality, because I think he's got the game for it, at least to shoot it that much. And we'll see it, right? With Derek Queen, I think when he and Derek Queen are out there, he helps Trey not need to dribble as much, right? And that's when Trey's at his best, moving off the ball, whether it's a back cut. We've seen multiple times, right, a dunk or hitting him for a three. But, yeah, Trey, I wish he was a little bit more aggressive with that basketball. I think it would have maybe helped him win last night's game if he had been.
Ollie, I'd brought up some abysmal defensive play of late, and no surprise, Herb Jones been missing some time with an ankle issue. Do you know any more updates on him and when we might be able to see him back in the lineup?
Yeah, we've been, bothering JB about it in pre- and post-game. My inkling is that he's probably a week and a half, maybe away.
Okay.
I heard it wasn't one of those high ankle sprains, but again, this one did bother him. As far as I know, he's not back to say like full contact practice, anything like that. So it's not like he'll be back for the Bulls game or whatever's coming up right after that. But I was told, look for him in about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks tops.
And you mentioned those Bulls. What's it going to take for this Bird gang to get another W against them? Because, I mean, at least they've had Chicago's numbers so far this season, and I go for, I think, the season sweep now of them tomorrow night.
Yeah, what you love about facing the Bulls is they just don't play defense, right? And if you're going to allow the Pelicans to get in the basically to the rim at will, they'll take advantage of it. Because I don't think there's a team better if you're kind of soft on the interior, and the Bulls are. And further, I think Coby White isn't going to play tomorrow. He got injured in the last game. And I think it's questionable if Giddey plays too. But if those two guys are out, I think this is a very winnable game for the Pelicans. But even if just one of those guys is out, I think that helps their odds immensely too. And they've already proven, like you just said, Steve, they've got their number, right? It's a good matchup for the Pels.
Everyone counts, Ollie. I mean, this upcoming stretch.
It does.
this upcoming stretch, there's some winnable games in there, knock on wood and everything like that. But they have some opponents that I think that the Pelicans can pick up a win against. Get back to your winning ways. Zion was asked as well about it in the post game after the Phoenix loss about, how do you get back into that win column? And he's just like, we got to share the ball more. That's another thing, Ollie, is the assist numbers. I think, hasn't Borrego said like 30 is the number that he wants to be at per game as far as assists go? And for a stretch, they were, around half of that. So being able to share the ball more, consistently passing as well on offense, is going to be key for this Pels offense to get back to where it was during that five-game winning streak, where they were hovering around basically 130 points a game.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, and look, I mean, Portland's been struggling a little bit. That's their opponent right after the Bulls. You got the Lakers, who honestly, if anybody's been paying attention, J.J. Redick's called them out. They've not been playing well. Hawks haven't been playing well. Then you got the Wizards. So, yeah, they've got a chance to win. And what you do want to see, and I am a little worried, is see if the rookies can get back on track. It felt like Jeremiah Frears was a shoo-in for 14, 15, 16 points. I feel like he might be hitting a rookie wall, right? You've seen these last couple of games. Derek Queen, he's been a little bit of yo-yo. And I know that we're putting a lot on these rookies, but again, there's a reason they were thrown in that starting lineup, because they were producing at a point. Now kind of their consistency is waning a little bit. So, JB's trying to manage all that while he's incorporating guys. Zion just re-entered the starting lineup. Poole, I'm sure he'd rather be a starter. And then you're going to get Herb back. And from what I'm hearing, DeJounte Murray is going to return sometime in January. So I think it's going to be kind of the continuity part of it anyways is going to be a struggle. So for this team to, say, get on a streak where they can honestly reel off more than five wins in a row, I just don't see it. Because this group, like I said, it's dealing with trying to develop rookies who might be hitting a wall versus some vets who want a bigger role, and guys just in and out of the lineup. That's tough to do when you've got all that kind of combination going on.
Always great info, Ollie. Appreciate your time, and see you in the Smoothie King Center soon.
Absolutely, guys, and have a good new year.
Thanks, Ollie. Happy new year.
To a better 2026 indeed. Thank you, Ollie Cosell, NBA writer covering the Birds. Man, oh man, things hopefully start upticking for this team, because they've got a chance now, obviously, with football season winding down. There's going to be a heck of a lot more interest in Pelicans basketball. We're going to take a break, come back with more of Sports Talk as we gear up for the Saints Hour. Mike Haas coming up at 7 o'clock. His guest tonight, running back Audric Estime, after his big day in Tennessee. Coming back with more Sports Talk, though, right after this. Stay tuned on WWL.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. we host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Folks, WWL invites you to ring in the new year at the NOLA New Year's Eve Midnight Fireworks Show. Join us as spectacular fireworks light up the sky over the mighty Mississippi and New Orleans' historic riverfront, East and West Bank. Start New Year's Eve celebration when the All-State Sugar Bowl Parade presented by Louisiana Tourism rolls through the French Quarter. 2 o'clock after that parade, explore French Quarter restaurants, bars, shops, and museums. Then from 9 p.m. till midnight, catch the free New Orleans Eve concert at Waldenburg Park. Then New Year's Day, catch the 92nd annual All-State Sugar Bowl Football Classic between the Georgia Bulldogs and Ole Miss Rebels with kickoff at 7 p.m. No better way to usher in 2026 than the tradition of the fleur-de-lis drop in the world-renowned NOLA New Year's Eve Midnight Fireworks Show produced by Crescent City Countdown Club in partnership with New Orleans Tourism and Cultural Foundation and presented by New Orleans & Company, the All-State Sugar Bowl, the Burger and Tiller Families, French Quarter Festivals, Inc., Pyromania Fireworks, and more than other 15 other community sponsors and WWLAMFM.com and our sister station, Magic 101.9. Taking a break, closing out Sports Talk right after this. Stay tuned on WWL, folks. That's a wrap on this edition of Sports Talk, folks. We shall be back tomorrow with our New Year's Eve edition. That'll go till 5:30. We'll hand things off to Pelicans pregame coverage where they'll be taking on the Chicago Bulls 6 p.m. on WWL 870 AM, 105.3 FM. That is tomorrow night. Coming up next here, 7 p.m., the Saints Hour, hosted by the voice of the Saints, Mike Haas. His guest tonight, running back Audric Estime, who just had a 94-yard touchdown day in the Saints' 34-26 comeback victory at the Tennessee Titans. You'll want to hear all that. Have a great one, folks. We'll be back tomorrow. Enjoy your evening, and hoo-that!
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.